Anyway, Jamal Mayers will join us here in a moment. Longtime NHLer, your former teammate. He's an analyst down in Chicago, and now he's an author. He's got a book
out. Who knew?
He's got a book out. How do you feel about that? I mean, he's your guy.
We sat beside each other on the plane in St. Louis, and he always, you know, he'd have stuff out. He was building a cottage or something. He had the architectural plans out one day and rolling the big sheath of paper. I'm like, really, Jammer? Are you going to do this right now? He's like, yeah, I'm going to make some adjustments. So he's a bright guy. He's always had a variety of interests. So, I mean, I guess it's great. I mean, we've seen Zach Hyman is a published author of a couple of children books as well. And I think it's a great thing for guys to do. And maybe somewhat topical right now, just kind of the idea of inclusivity and making hockey for everyone, and maybe some of what his experiences were like growing up in Toronto playing hockey, which, well, I can ask him whether they've all been positive or maybe a little negative mixed in there as well.
Sure. Yeah, and I would assume he played in the GTHL growing up.
Like, absolutely, he did. Right? Yeah, I think he played for, I want to say Thornhill, but I could, Thornhill, one of those teams.
One of the hills. One of the hills north of the city.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, one of those hills. I think Richmond Hill was in forever. Thornhill got in late. I don't know. They come and go, man. Like, I haven't played in the GTHL in over 20 years. And I hear some names of teams, and I'm like, who are they? And when did show up? I never heard of those teams.
Yeah.
I just assume when I played, like, the 8 years that I was playing in the GTHL or whatever it was, that's all that ever existed. No one before, no one after. And I don't want to hear about any of these other new goofy teams. You're not legitimate in my books.
Like, when I was Toronto Young Nats, which is where Eric Lindros played. Toronto Red Wings, where Mike Peck and Kevin Weeks played. Don Mills Flyers was Anson Carter's, where he played. The Mississauga Reps. Toronto Marlies, where I played. Those were the core teams. But I heard that Wexford Raiders. Wexford, which was Stan Butler's team, and they churned out a trillion college scholarships every year. That Wexford doesn't exist anymore, if I'm not mistaken. Someone correct me on Twitter.
I think you might be right.
That thing folded. We used to play down at Ted Reeve.
Yep.
And it was around forever and very successful franchise, and it's kind of gone by the wayside.
Well, I know Ted Reeve is still there, but I don't know.
Ted Reeve is, but the Wexford Raiders are not filling it anymore.
I did not know that. I played for them as a kid.
My last years of AAA were for Wexford, but I don't know. I don't have boys. I've never been involved in minor hockey almost, thankfully, so... I'm a little clued out on all that.
Yeah, I'm completely out of the loop. I don't know anyone, you know, that I'm really close with that's playing. And I'm sure it's I'm sure it's even crazier now than it was when I was playing and when you were playing. But it was high intensity. If you're playing AAA, it felt like you were, you know, playing in the best league in the world for your age group.
And
you were.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
4 or 5 days a week. I think summer camps are a thing now. I don't know if you were part of that era where summer hockey was
just
really
starting when I was playing.
So I
just starting.
I never played summer hockey ever in my life once. I played soccer. But that, and I think now a lot of kids come from out of town and kind of get billeted almost. Like they move in and they move in with a parent of a player on the team, and they come from Sudbury or from California or from Alberta or from Newfoundland, whatever, to live in Toronto, to have the hockey experience, and they bring them in from all over the place.
Over the world, Johnny. I've heard Russian players coming over.
That's crazy. I remember the
families
big story.
Moving over here.
Do you remember Richard Park played for Minnesota Wild? He played for a few different teams around the NHL. He was a big story because he was a California kid who came to play for the Young Nats and lived in the city with his older sister, and it was like, this kid who came over at like 14 from wherever he was from in California to play minor hockey in the MTHL back then, the GTHL now. It seemed insanity, but I guess he was a trailblazer now.
I don't remember, you know, growing up. I'm sure there were kids coming up from Michigan, you know, some kids coming up from the States. I was a big part of the battle, though, between the MTHL and the OMHA, because the OMHA was really fighting about... It's kind of like a brain drain almost, like all the best players from, you know, Newmarket and Durham region.
Vaughan,
and out,
King
you know,
City. Yeah.
Exactly. They were all wanting to play in the MTHL to a point where I actually got screwed over badly. My age group, we got excluded from the Pee Wee tournament in Quebec as a penalty against the MTHL. Yeah, we weren't allowed to go. We were the only age group, I think, ever, you know, in the history of that tournament that no representation from the MTHL.
Because really? That's a highlight tournament.
It was the biggest.
Everyone, Wexford.
Yes. When you were a kid, you dream. When you were before Pee Wee, I mean, you were a kid when you played in it. But you were like, if you were in minor novice or novice or minor Adam, you're like, that we got to get goal. To Quebec. Yeah, you got to be in that tournament. And
hat trick, first game in the Colisée.
Wow, look at you, Johnny.
Yes.
I wonder if Jammer played in Quebec.
I wonder.
Let's find out. Here he is, longtime NHLer, former Maple Leaf, former teammate of yours, Johnny, and analyst down in Chicago, now an author. His new book is out, Hockey Is For Me. Here is Jamal Mayers, and a legend in the MTHL. What's up, Jammer? How you doing, buddy?
What an introduction. You guys have to travel with me. No, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Excited, as I'm sure you guys are, to see that hockey is back, and looking to see what happens. It's unprecedented times, and the guys are going to compete for the cup. This is exciting.
Before we get there, Jammer, we're just reminiscing minor hockey. Did you play AAA in Pee Wee, and did you make it to the Quebec tournament?
I sure did not, MJ. I was a double-A player all the way up until 14. I played for Don Mills Flyers. Prior to that, I played for the Leaside Kings for years. So we played in the Gatineau tournament at Pee Wee. It's the elite, the second-tier tournament, but certainly knew all about that tournament and was watching from afar all the guys, our age group, competing, and there's no question about it. It still holds its lore all these years later.
Yeah, it really does. That's interesting, like the MIT almost up in Gatineau.
And that's right.
It's, you know, but that, I didn't know that about you, though, Jamal, that you played double-A, like a guy who made it to the NHL, a guy who you were in the league for a long time. But your story, it's actually not, you know, it's not that rare. I know Mark Giordano had a similar situation.
I played double-A in high school.
Yeah,
well.
There you go. So, like, is that something that comes up in the book, Hockey Is For Me? And when you talk about your story, how many people are surprised that, not that double-A is like house league or anything, it's still very good hockey, but there's a lot of kids that, you know, when, like, I grew up playing with Jason Spezza. Spets, when we were in novice, you knew he was going to the NHL.
Exactly. Well, I think this book is, I've written five of them, but this first one is just me kind of getting my toes wet and learning how to skate. Certainly the other books touch on different elements, but the biggest thing I can say, honestly, is that for me is about loving the game and enjoying the game and continuing to get better. And what I try to tell kids is that their development is not a linear path. Very few players it is. So for the players that aren't Jason Spezza, it's about enjoying the game, loving the game, continuing to get better. And the finish line isn't 12 years old. The finish line, you know, hopefully if you make it, is, you know, what kind of player are you going to be? And I tell my 7-year-old, maybe I'm crazy, I tell him the finish line is when you're 25. 25 will tell you who you are as a hockey player. So let's not get caught up and stuck on what you are at 10, 11, and 12. Let's keep enjoying and loving it and getting better.
Jammer, listen, we spent a lot of time in the planes, talking, chatting, reminiscing, telling stories. I didn't know you had author in your future. Where did just kind of coming up with doing a children's series of books, where'd that come from?
Well, honestly, it would kind of just happen organically. I work for the Hawks, and I do things in the community. They have three great programs. One's called First Stride. Well, the first one's called Goal, which is Get Out and Learn. We visit over 150 schools, mostly Black and Hispanic city schools, and we take over their phys ed class and teach them how to play ball hockey and give them all the equipment to do so as one of their curriculum things going on through the year. And then we have First Stride, which allows those same kids, after they've done Goal for a year, to come to the rink, eliminate all the obstacles as far as transportation, getting them to the new practice facility that's in the west side, and get them on the ice trying skating for the first time. And then you know about the Hawks, Little Hawks program, which the NHL and NHLPA partnered up to create an avenue at low cost, less than $150, for these same kids all over the city, in fact, to try hockey for up to 10 times, full gear, head to toe. And I'm part of three of those programs. But a lot of those programs we do don't start until third and fourth grade. And a couple years ago, with my little guy being 5, I was trying to think of how are we going to engage these younger kids in these schools to think that skating could be for them and eventually hockey. And then born out of that was me telling tiny little stories about me growing up and writing and playing the game and it turned into it. Before I knew it, I had four and five legit stories that I would read to my little guy, and he would inevitably say, well, what happens next? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. So I'd have to go back and start writing. And after I wrote five of them, I said to myself, well, I got to stop because this takes a lot of time, and I don't know if anything's ever going to come of it. And so I presented it to Pete Haston and to everybody at the Blackhawks. And right from the get-go, they were extremely supportive and behind it and helped me find an illustrator. And it was a two-year process to get this first book up and out. And I'm excited because, you know what, guys, for me, it's about, you know, think about the times we're under right now. I certainly didn't have the foresight of how timely this would be. But for me, it's about three things. It's how to bring up the topic of diversity and inclusion for parents, for coaches, for administrators, and for, you know, even teammates to understand how can we possibly make our environment, whether it's athletics or whatever they're doing extracurricularly, more inclusive and more enticing to other families that may not think it's for them.
We're chatting with Jamal Mayers. The book is Hockey Is For Me. You know him as a longtime NHLer, former Leaf, and an analyst down in Chicago. And you mentioned at the top of the conversation how excited you are that, you know, everyone's back in camp and we're going to have hockey up and running again in a few weeks. And you cover a team and you live in a market that is in it's in a weird spot. You know, the Blackhawks, they didn't have a great year. I don't think they were going to get in. I don't think they would get to the top eight, but they're in now at 12. They're playing Edmonton, and it's not like the Oilers have a rich history of playoff success in the past handful of years. What's the mood like in Chicago? How do you feel about the chances of Chicago? I don't think it would be shocking the world to beat Edmonton, but considering the circumstances, how do you feel about their chances against the Oilers?
I think they're good. I think, you know what, one thing that's really strange about this playoff, and for every team, usually, as you know, MJ, it's a battle of attrition to get to the playoffs. Can we get there and healthy? I think we might have the group. And that's for the teams, I believe, in the top eight that legitimately, before the season starts, think they have a chance. But now, for all intents and purposes, almost every team is healthy. And so you're getting, yes, they've been off for 4 months, but you're getting a look at teams that really believe they have an opportunity to get off to a good start. And the benefit for the Blackhawks, in my opinion, is the shorter the series benefits them. So if they get, you know, Corey Crawford obviously is not attending training camp right now, but if they have a great goaltender becomes even more important in these short series, they get off to a good start. I know there's excitement in Chicago. I know they're excited to get started, and I don't think they feel like it's a lost cause. I think they're excited about an opportunity to be in the playoffs and to play the Oilers and see what happens. They have the experience to lean on as well, so let's not underestimate that as well.
They need goaltending for sure, and Corey Crawford unfit to play to start camp, and if, I don't know what that means in Chicago, but if he's not ready to go, then there could be issues. But the other issue about staying healthy is getting through the next couple weeks, Jammer, and getting to the bubble and having as many people negative, hopefully everybody, as possible. And I thought of you when we're talking about guys stepping up in the dressing room and saying, hey, guys, you know what? Even though we're in training camp now in our home cities, we're not in the bubble, we got to be smarter. That means no bars, no dinners out. We got to lock it down now to make sure we stay healthy. Would you have said something like that? Would you have called? I mean, I see you as a guy who would do that, and who might do that for Chicago? Because I think it's an important part of the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, and I think a number of guys would say those things. I think Duncan Keith for sure, Johnny, Jonathan Toews, there's no question about it, even Patrick Kane. I think that, you know, there's no lack of leadership in that room. I think you're absolutely right that is exactly what every locker room should be saying. And at the end of the day, someone's going to have to do the grocery shopping. I'd say order out, get yourself to the hub city, get yourself to the bubble, because that's the most important thing right now as they start to prepare. So, different times, no question about it, but sacrifice now as every player has done. Why not sacrifice now for a chance to compete for the Cup?
The book is called Hockey Is For Me. You know him as a longtime NHLer, former Leaf analyst with NBC down in Chicago, Jamal Mares. Great catching up with you, Jamal. We'll do it again down the road. Stay safe. Thank you, buddy.
I appreciate it, guys. I love listening, so keep it going.
You got it. There he is, Jamal Mares. Yeah, and you know, we were talking about this earlier, Johnny, and we both agreed on this. And it's not about one particular team. If you're Bettman and company, you got to get through camp. You got to get into the bubble. And I think you've got to get through the first kind of play-in round. And then you would feel maybe not 100% comfortable. You may never feel 100% confident and comfortable, but much more so, because then half the teams are going home. And the teams that are left, there's eight of them left, they can see the finish line. They can see the Stanley Cup. They can feel it. So the idea that they might somehow put that at risk by doing something stupid or selfish, it seems more far-fetched at that point as opposed to right now, where you're dealing with 22 different teams and who knows what's going on in all these different markets.
Yeah, a week to 9 days in, you'll send home four teams, 200 and whatever it is, 12 people. That just lowers the odds right away, more controllable group. And you'll have the rhythm of life and the days and the food. And you know, guys will figure out how it works safely. I don't think guys will be figuring out how it works and how they can cheat the system and get out and take risks. They'll figure out, how do we make this manageable? How do we make it entertaining, fun, livable for up to 2 months in this system? And I think you're absolutely right. You know, everyone's referencing the next 10 days until they get to camp. And then I think you're correct. They probably have to do a little quick quarantine and some rapid testing to get cleared into the bubble. And then, yeah, getting through exhibition week and then into that first round. But once they do that, I mean, Bundesliga, they got through their season.
Yeah, absolutely.
The EPL, they're getting through their season.
I feel the same way about the bubble.
Golf is
Orlando.
Getting through their season. I mean,
yeah. I think there might be some positive tests. There might be,
sure,
but you
will
can
be.
Trace quickly. You handle it appropriately, and you move on. And because these other sports have had to deal with that, with different athletes, you know, basically in and out of the sport based on a positive test or whatever, we've become accustomed to it, and it will never feel normal. We hope it won't be the normal for long, but I think because we have got so far down this path. And we've been building it up for so long, and we've been talking about every possible angle for so long. We've prepared ourselves collectively for when that happens, when a player has to miss a game, or two players have to miss a game. Okay, it sucks, so be it, but at least we're playing. Let's go. And let's brace ourselves for it and be ready for it. And the players and teams can't use it as an excuse. If it happens, so be it. You still got to go out there and play.
And you just got to wrap your head around it. And it's going to happen. Someone will test positive. Treat it like an ankle sprain.
Yeah.
Treat it like a hamstring. Like, you know, people get hurt. They separate their shoulder. They miss 10 days. It's what happens. And it's terrible that it happens this way, and it's seemingly unfair because it's not related to the game or whatever. But that's how the teams and the athletes will absolutely approach it that way. There'll be no feeling for themselves. This isn't right. It's like, nope, we got to keep going. Got to keep playing. We have to keep winning. And so we as fans and media should probably try to approach it the same way. It'll be unfortunate, but it's going to be the reality.
I think you're right. And what's going to suck is the fact that a lot of these guys are going to be asymptomatic, and they could play. They feel like they should play, but they can't play, which obviously makes it very different. But we all know the rules, and everyone knows it going into it.